This is the 19th annual Cybersecurity Awareness Month. It's sponsored by the NSA and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA.
Oh, you brought acronyms.
Yeah, that's what we do. IT is all about acronyms, isn't it? But really what we're here to talk about is some basic cyber hygiene. It's how you operate online. And we can talk about the four action points that the Cybersecurity Awareness Month is focusing on this year. And it's think before you click, recognizing phishing, when people are trying to get you to enter in your information or steal your credentials based on, you know, Amazon's going to close your account or Netflix has changed your pet. Like, there's a lot of these things. And you really have to realize none of these companies are going to reach out directly to you on these items.
Right. If someone's looking for information or contact, it's not going to be the sources that you trusted initially.
Right. And they're trying to find, you know, we see it all the time in operations when, you know, a employee will receive an email that says, well, we need you to verify your password. I really never need anybody to ever verify any information out of the blue.
The other thing I noticed, because I go through this, and sometimes I'm on a computer, sometimes I'm on a laptop, desktop laptop, sometimes I'm on my phone, and I can be in a hurry. You know, I can be between meetings, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to go buy these tickets online. I have 5 minutes. I'll go ahead and do that. If we're not paying attention, it might be because we're in a hurry or we're not looking for the right things. Mm-hmm. Is there anything specific that we should watch for?
Normally, anything that's going to tell you you have this arbitrary deadline that's really high pressure, like someone sends you something saying, I need you to verify this within the next 5 minutes, that usually, that trying to put on this hard timeline to force you to make a decision, that's usually a red flag, because there isn't really anything really important from operation side of IT that we're going to say you need to do this within the next 5 minutes. You know, that false timeline is to make you make a mistake, to force you to not critically think about your action.
Right. So cyber hygiene. We might be sitting on the couch in our underwear, but we need to be clean thinking when it comes to following a trail on a website.
And it's pretty straightforward things like having passwords that are not the same at every service you use. Because it doesn't matter how good an agency or an organization or a business's cyber practices are, someone's going to get in. They're big targets. They have lots of information. And I like to just put out there, you know, if the NSA can be hacked, which it was, everybody has this possibility of being hacked. And so it's really important not to use the same credential, the same password, or the same key, like for your house, for every lock you have, for every password you have. Because if you lose that one key, everything's vulnerable. It's the same thing with your passwords.
It takes a little more energy. I have several that I use, and I'm always having to remind myself which one I've assigned where, but it's worth doing. It's a little frustrating when you're trying to log in and you forgot which password you assigned, but it's worth doing, and I have a little cheat sheet that's actually a physical thing that I can keep safe and look at regularly.
Yep, there's software packages you can use on your phone that have the way you can put your passwords in there, or you can put them in if you have a specific phone and you make sure that it has a good passcode or a lock on it. You can put your username and your password in a notes thing. As long as they're separate and as long as they're secure, you make sure that no one else has access to them, but that's a viable opportunity to keep your passwords more secure.
What about saving your passwords? I know that Chrome offers an option to save passwords. And I look at that and I always say no, because I'm never sure if it's specific to the machine I'm using, if Chrome's got it out in the cloud and I can access it from anywhere. Are there areas where we probably shouldn't save a password, or are there options that people should avoid, or is it safe to save a password like with a browser?
So that's in a spot where it really depends, because if you have a good password on all your devices and you log into Chrome will save that password encrypted in Google's cloud and their servers online, where you can access it from all your different machines. So theoretically, you could have a 24-character password you don't need to remember if the browser saved it, and you have your devices secure so no one else could then log on to your system and then just go to the thing and log in automatically.
Yeah, that's important because I don't use a passcode on my phone.
Yeah, and see, and that gets into a point where then it's just like papers on a desk.
Yeah, it's just sitting out there for anybody.
Exactly. And so then, no, I wouldn't save any passwords there because if anybody grabbed your phone, they can access all your accounts or your bank account if you do online banking through your phone app, through your bank.
Yeah, all those things have passcodes. So.
Yep.
You are very knowledgeable about IT and web communications and existing in the cyber world. But being a member of Kirtland Community College, you all share that and create opportunities for others to be as awesome as you are.
We do, and I'm the director of IT, but I also teach adjunct in our cybersecurity program. And our cybersecurity program allows students to come in, and we will take anybody in from a baseline knowledge of I know how to turn on a computer, and we'll walk through all these steps. And then after a two-year program or a 63-credit program, they can find careers in cybersecurity, and this is a real need. One of the options or one of the items in the Cybersecurity Awareness Month plan is to see yourself in cyber, and that means I can see myself working in this career because this career is ever-changing. It won't ever be a position where we don't need any more cyber analysts. We don't need any more security analysts. This is constantly growing, evolving. Every day is different. So if that's something that's exciting for someone, or if some of the listeners know someone looking for a career change or to migrate into a new field, or a graduate from a high school that's don't know what I need to do, Michigan has a lot of open cybersecurity analyst jobs, and it's not something that's just entry-level help desk. It goes all the way up to C-suite, chief information security officers at organizations. And every industry needs cybersecurity. It affects everything that touches online and computers. So it doesn't matter if it's healthcare or manufacturing or utilities or schools or just mom and pop businesses. 45% of the breaches that were discovered last year happened to small business. So it's overwhelmingly across all industries.
So putting your hands on something different all the time, ever-growing, and what a good feeling to learn something new every day. Just by definition, this industry is that.
It's that and growth all the time.
And Kirtland, a good place to start?
Kirtland's a great place to start, and we have transfer agreements with other institutions, so you can take your two-year degree, and then you could go out and get a job, or you could continue that on into a four-year degree, and then graduate programs if you want to.
What's a good first step if any of our listeners are interested in finding out more about starting their education at Kirtland?
If they're interested in coming to Kirtland, go to kirtland.edu as a website, click on admissions, and we can get you started on a process. It's a free application to apply for admissions, and we can start winter semester starts 1st of January, right in January.
Most awesome. And a beautiful campus, a comfortable place to go to school, great people. Matt Bierman from IT Services and the IT Education Department at Kirtland. Thanks for joining us on Northern Focus. I hope we get to see you again.
Thanks, Jo Marie. It's been fun.
We've got a couple messages from our fine partners. Northern Focus, of course, brought to us by Kirtland Community College. And we serve up goodies in the green room from Cops and Donuts. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Ed classes guaranteed to transfer to your four-year college or university. At Kirtland, your future is still in session, whether it takes classes online or at one of our state-of-the-art campuses. Learn more at kirtland.edu and apply online today. The application is fast and free.
Come to the Village of Ross Commons' 150th birthday bash and meet me, Joe Mama, and the Q Crew, Saturday from 1 to 3 at the Osabo River Center. It's right downtown on Main Street. We'll be giving away Faygo Pop to wet your whistle and cool Faygo swag on the Q100 Spin to Win Wheel. And you can register to win a gift card bundle worth $150. Celebrate Ross Commons' 150th with Joe Mama and the Q Crew from Q100, saving rock and roll one listener at a time.
Yes, I'll be there Saturday. And in fact, a little bit later in the show, we're going to find out more about the Village of Roscommon and the sesquicentennial celebration. But right now, I am joined, how timely. Ms. Michelle Gallagher is the new American Red Cross Executive Director of the Northern Michigan Chapter. Welcome to Northern Focus, Michelle.
Good morning.
This is a very, you must be busy right now. So thank you for taking the time to share some information. First of all, a little bit about yourself. What brought you to the American Red Cross?
Well, I've been here for a month. I just started, so I stepped right into a hurricane.
Yeah, Mother Nature said, okay, now that you're in place, let's see what you can do.
Let's see what you got. I just really wanted to be, everyone knows what the Red Cross does. They're so amazing, and I just really wanted to be a part of that and be, it's such a huge territory. I'm in 27 counties, up into the UP, and just help get the word out that, what Red Cross does in the community. We're not just blood drives and major hurricanes and disasters.
So as an executive director of such a vast and organization with varied missions, what do you think your background is that is the most helpful in this type of role?
I've worked in nonprofits for over 15 years, so I understand that world. And just relationships, it's really all about relationships and people understanding what we do and wanting to be a part of it. I mean, we run 67% of our quote-unquote staff is volunteers. So it's really important that people know what we do and where we need help and how they can help.
Well, I know this is radio, but literally you're putting a face on the American Red Cross for our listeners out there. And right now we are really pushing people to be aware of the need in the southeastern part of the United States since Hurricane Ian delivered such a devastating blow to Florida and the Carolinas. How is the American Red Cross in this Michigan region involved in the disaster relief and response efforts for this particular circumstance?
Like I said, I've been here for a month. My second week on the job, we're in full, they call it grace, guys. We're in full disaster mode. And it has been amazing being on this side of it and seeing how quickly everything happens. So before the hurricane even hit, we had 300 volunteers in Florida setting up shelters. On Monday and Tuesday before the hurricane, we had over 11,000 people evacuated already in our shelters. And we had 84 semis full of supplies sitting in Jacksonville, waiting to figure out where they needed to go once the hurricane hit. So that was like completely overwhelming and crazy to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, this happened so fast. It's amazing. But as far as the Michigan region, so we have 50 volunteers from Michigan down there right now. We have our emergency response vehicles. We call them ERVs. They deliver like the hot meals and stuff like that. We have, I believe, 8 from Michigan down there and 1 from Northern Michigan. So we had a volunteer leave last Wednesday from Crawford County in one of our ERVs. So she's down there. She drove it down. She's been down there the whole time.
Right. So when disaster strikes, it isn't just people in that immediate community hop to it. The planning ahead of time and then the call to other regions. So it's, I hate to say this, but it's like the hurricane happened to all of us.
Absolutely.
In your eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah, we still have 1,600 volunteers down there from across the country. So, it didn't just affect Florida. I mean, that's the hardest hit, obviously, but South Carolina got hit a little bit. Puerto Rico was hit by a hurricane right before. So we're everywhere.
And are you keeping up? Are they dragging you along, hanging on to the caboose as stuff goes forward?
Absolutely.
Or how is that response effort going? Does it put a strain on us here, or is Red Cross ready to address instances?
It doesn't. I mean, we're ready. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like truly been overwhelming to see how fast everything happens. But yeah, there was a whole plan for deploying people, volunteers and staff get deployed as well. But still making sure we have people here because of, we have the biomed with all the blood drives. We respond to every house fire and the disaster preparedness, all that kind of stuff. So we still have to have people here as well, doing stuff, and we have plenty. I don't want to say plenty because we can always use more volunteers, but I think we have about 200 volunteers throughout the Northern Michigan chapter.
You know, it's good to hear the Red Cross forever and ever if people want to make a contribution or they want to help, but they're a little bit leery because obviously there's people out there that would exploit a disaster like Hurricane Ian.
Right.
But the American Red Cross knows what they're doing. They make good use of contributions and volunteer hours. What can people do if they want to be a part of the American Red Cross efforts, a trusted organization that does the work and knows how to do it well?
Well, there's three ways people can help. They can donate. It's expensive, you know, and we are a nonprofit, so redcross.org is the best place to go. You know, the money's going, you can go directly to the hurricane relief. Volunteer. If you signed up to volunteer today, we're not going to send you to Florida tomorrow. There is a vetting process and stuff, but we are moving people through very, very quickly as we can, so that we're, even though you may not go to Florida this time, you're ready to go next time. And then give blood. You know, giving blood is really important as well.
Right. One of the primary missions and one of the longest standing missions of the American Red Cross. Michelle Gallagher, the new American Red Cross Executive Director of the Northern Michigan Chapter. She's based out of Traverse City. They're people you can trust. We're going to let Michelle get back to work because we're in the middle of a disaster, which, it sounds to me like your life could be like this pretty much all the time.
But like one after another. I hope not. I hope that there's, but I'm sure there will be more, yes.
Anything else you'd like to add about the American Red Cross here in Northern Michigan?
I think just go to redcross.org and see what we do. I mean, we are doing stuff here. We're taking care of our families and stuff here. We are community-based. We're not just out there, you know, big disasters. So
check out the American Red Cross. Make some connections like Michelle did and be a part of something great whose reach of assistance is vast and pretty well organized, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Michelle, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Get back to work, girl.
All right.
You're listening to Northern Focus at Q100, brought to us by Kirtland Community College. We've got a couple messages, you know what they are. They're coming from our very fine partners here at Q100.
There's a new player in town. Hi, I'm Herman Moore, Lions All-Pro wide receiver, and I'm talking about Eagle Casino and Sports, the real money mobile casino. It's so easy to play. You can go from wager to winner to wallet, just like that.
Sign up now and we'll match your deposit up to $1,500. Or you can get a risk-free bet up to $1,000.
Eagle Casino and Sports. Made in Michigan. Made for Michigan.
Must be 21 or older in Michigan to play.
Catch all the action of Grayling Viking High School sports on Q100.
Vikings coin toss sponsor Horizon Bank, your community bank. Before they lend, they listen. Start your journey today at horizonbank.com.
Q100, home of Grayling High School Viking sports.
Welcome back to Northern Focus at Q100. I'm Joe Mama filling in for JC in the afternoon. This is our show to present great information from community partners, and another gal is joining us in studio, Linda Rutkowski. Welcome. She is here from the Crawford Partnership for Substance Abuse Prevention. What is the acronym again, Linda?
Well, it used to be CPSAP, C-P-S-A-P, but we have a new name.
Okay.
Now. So we are now the Crawford Partnership to End Substance Abuse. Misuse.
Okay.
We are kind of regrouping, getting back together on a regular basis and looking at some initiatives that we can do in the community to heighten awareness around substance misuse.
Right.
And the problems that come with substance misuse.
Yeah. Yes. I'm wondering if COVID didn't complicate things immensely. It creates a sense of isolation for individuals, and if people are having a tough time and nobody's watching or they can't connect with others. So it's good to hear you're getting back together and reaching out in so many ways.
Yes, yes. COVID did wreak havoc with a lot of folks. Through mental health, the people who have a substance use disorder, that isolation just heightens the problem that they're dealing with.
Right.
So it's nice being on the other end of COVID.
Yes, and knocking on wood.
And just being able to get things going again.
Right.
So our first thing that we have going on is tomorrow. So we are partnering with Michelle at the Medicine Shop to do a naloxone giveaway out in the parking lot tomorrow from 9:30 to 1, which are their hours on Saturdays.
Right here in Grayling, the Medicine Shop Pharmacy, right downtown.
Yes. So we were able to get naloxone from the state, so there's no charge for it. And we encourage people, even someone who doesn't know anyone with a substance use disorder or, you know, have never used it before. It's a nasal spray. It's just like you would use a nasal spray off the counter. And there are instructions with it, signs of an overdose that somebody could look for, and then know whether or not to use it. And the good thing about naloxone is it's benign if it's used on someone who is not having an overdose. So if I use naloxone right now, it would do nothing. It wouldn't harm me. It wouldn't help me. It would do nothing.
So this is an emergency relief therapy, naloxone nasal spray, that someone could use in the event of a potential opioid overdose.
Yes, either through prescription drug medication. A lot of people take prescription painkillers, and, you know, we're all human.
Right.
We all make mistakes. And with a lot of medications, it's not that big of a deal if you make a mistake. But with opioids, it is.
Right.
So anyone who is taking an opioid medication really should have naloxone alongside that just in case.
So this is something that any individual, whether you're a grandma or a parent or an individual who is currently prescribed opioid drugs, could have free naloxone on hand. Does it have a shelf life? I'm wondering.
It does. And because of the prevalence of it, a lot of studies have been done in the last 5 years. And we now know that the efficacy remains long after the expiration date. Most times when we get a new batch of naloxone, there's about a 2-year shelf life on it, or a 2-year expiration date. But we get information from law enforcement who also uses naloxone. They often will take the expired product and use it as a backup, and they continue to have saves even long after it's expired.
Because our law enforcement as first responders often encounter a situation where it is perceived that the person could be in the throes of an opioid overdose.
Correct.
So this is a great thing to have on hand. It's not something that if you say to yourself, well, I'm not a drug addict, I don't misuse opioids, that doesn't necessarily rule you out as someone who might want to have it on hand.
That's so true. Yes. And also tomorrow we will have some Deterra disposal bags for anyone who would like to take one home with them.
What is that?
To dispose of medications. It's an environmentally friendly pouch that you pour a little bit of water in, put your drugs in that you want to destroy, and then you seal it up and throw it in the trash, and it's biodegradable. We were hoping to have a law enforcement take-back day, but we just couldn't work out the logistics on it. Everybody's shorthanded right now, and so as a backup, we'll offer these small pouches that people can take home and clean out their medicine cabinets.
Right.
But also to remind everyone that there is a national DEA take-back day on Saturday, October, I believe it's 23rd. I didn't check before we came in.
I think it would, yeah. It would be the 15th, the 22nd.
22nd.
Saturday, yes. The 22nd.
Saturday, the 22nd. Thank you. That the DEA sponsors twice a year to remind people to dispose of their medications. But here in Grayling, for such a small community, they have so many options for taking back drugs, taking back medications at the City Hall, the Grayling Police Station, the County Building, the Walgreens Pharmacy, Munson, and the Medicine Shop will all take back medications for destruction.
And if you're in Traverse City or up north, your communities are going to have similar options. This is great that you're handing out the bags with a quick explanation of how to use them effectively. I think it would be easier for me if I did have something I wanted. the impetus is like, oh, I'll just flush it down the toilet. And that is a bad thing to do.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. We do not want to negatively impact our groundwater supply.
Right. So don't be flushing things. Don't be pouring grease down your kitchen sink. And don't throw old medicine in the toilet. Get you one of these bags or call local law enforcement or even leadership in your community and say, hey, where can I get this bag that I can dispose of my stuff? Or where can I drop this stuff off? We're going to try to make it easy for you folks so we can all keep each other safe. Tell us one more time, a little recap, Linda, about tomorrow's event then at the Medicine Shop Pharmacy.
9:30 to 1 in the parking lot right out in front of the medicine shop, and we will have disposal bags for medications,
right,
and naloxone, all at no charge. And we would just love for people to come by and chat with us and take some of our product home with them.
Yeah, Linda Rutkowski from Families Against Narcotics. These folks are donating their time and their effort and their passion. Thanks so much for doing that, Linda. We're going to drive people your way because you're a great source of resources and information. So
thank you so much.
Thanks for being on Northern Focus. Cats and kittens, we've got a couple messages from our very cool partners here at Q100, and we'll continue with Northern Focus brought to us by Kirtland Community College at Q100.
She's your baby, but she needs some new parts. Of course, we're talking about your late model vehicle. Trying to find replacement parts can sometimes be a challenge, but Roscommon Auto Recyclers is here to help. We have a large inventory of used late model parts to return your baby to like new condition. If we don't have it in stock, let us find that part for you. Find us in Roscommon at 290 East Federal Highway, just off I-75, exit 244, or online at RoscommonAutoRecyclers.com.
Catch all the action of Grayling Viking High School sports on Q100.
Your first down sponsor is Feeney Ford of Grayling. When you're looking for a car, you won't have to go far. You'll find it fast at Feeney.
Q100, home of Grayling High School Viking sports.
Welcome back to Northern Focus. I'm Joe Mama, standing in for JC. We've got a full house today. It's great to have all these guests, which means we're all back out getting together and not only doing good works in the community, but having some fun. And right now, Dan Scow is here from the Village of Roscommon. I'm excited to chat with you, Dan. I'm going to join you tomorrow at the 150th birthday bash.
Yes.
Down in Roscommon. It goes on all day.
Yes, starts with the farmer's market at 10 o'clock in the morning.
10 a.m. Oh, I've been telling people one.
That's our last farmer's market of the season. So
okay.
We're just kind of hooking on to the end of that and starting at 1 o'clock with the birthday party.
With the festivities. Yeah, but if you want the good produce and the best-looking yard art, you better get out there early for the farmer's market.
Yeah. If you don't go early, you don't get any cucumbers. I learned that a couple of times.
Okay. So what happens at 1 o'clock? I know there's live music is one thing I was particularly interested in.
That's what we tried to put together, a nice program of live music. We actually are going to do some things during the market. We're going to have a young man, George Fry, play for an hour during the market.
Nice.
And then we've got Sean the Bagpiper coming for a little bit in the market.
Ooh.
And then Derek Boyk is going to play for a couple hours before the actual party starts, just to bring in that entertainment into that market.
And so get the good vibe going.
And then at 1 o'clock will be Derek, and then 3 o'clock we're going to have the Offbeat playing.
Nice. Friends
group
of the channel here. Yeah. We know the Offbeat.
Yes.
We know Derek, and there's a couple other familiar faces in your lineup, too.
Yep, and at 5 we're going to have Motor City Memories.
Right, that's a Motown style groovy
awesome
music.
And then to finish off the evening, we're going to have RDS Blues Trio, and that is Seth Kilborn, the band director at Roscommon High School, and Don Mick, the former superintendent, and another gentleman. So we're going to finish it off with some blues music.
And friendly local faces.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you're going to keep us entertained throughout the entire day. What kind of activities can folks expect when they get there?
Well, in addition to the music, we've set up some a time period for some kids' games. So Tracy at the Chamber of Commerce is bringing in some kids' games to do. the gymnastics, Sky High Gymnastics is going to do a gymnastics
demonstration. Pumpkin decorating, I think?
Well, we had this idea that maybe they could bring their pumpkins in and have a contest to judge them, but they're not going to decorate on site. They'll just bring theirs in and show them.
Oh, but nice.
But nice, yeah. We wanted to include kids. So
I did a Shinedown pumpkin last year. That's a band.
I'm
putting Dan on the spot.
Okay. Shine Down. I'll be Googling that on the way
home.
Very
expensive concert tickets is what that is.
Oh, okay. And then there's going to be free hot dogs and soft drinks, 3 to 5 for,
ooh, for the kids.
Kids, families, and so forth. And then food trucks. And there'll also be some adult beverages available on site as well.
Yeah, the beer tent. When does that open up?
That's going to be 3 o'clock until 9 or so.
Okay, I like your timing on that because I'm going to be there calling in live to Roadrunner Show. We're going to be giving away $150 in gift cards, a big bundle, in honor of your 150th birthday. So we want people to come and do that. We're going to give away free Faygo Pop, and we have a spin to win wheel for stuff. And we're going to be there from 1 to 3, so we're inviting folks to come down and see us while they're at the 150th birthday bash. And then when our broadcast is over, the beer tent opens. So
yes.
I'm thinking you might have done that for my benefit on purpose.
Somebody else can pack up and you can just stay.
Yeah, we'll just stay and definitely have a beer and celebrate. Plus, what a great opportunity to run into your friends and neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
Once school starts, it gets to be a busy time and we're all pulled in so many different directions. But to have an event where a lot of people can come together, run into friends and neighbors they know.
Yeah. Well, we were hoping to have it be a community-wide celebration, all generations. I think we're there with the kids. And then Historical Society is going to be on site with some displays inside the River Center.
Right.
And some folks there to kind of talk about history. So we're trying to cover it all and have a nice party for ourselves.
The Osabo River Center is a remodeled train station.
Yes.
And I remember when the project was finished, it's quite beautiful.
Oh.
It was a great project, and I think folks should come down just to check out the site. Can you tell us a little bit about the Osabo River Center?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about it. It was the train depot at one point. It's been moved several times until it's at its current site. And then it's been redone and turned into a museum by the Roscommon Recreation Authority, and it really is a fabulous venue to visit. And I hope people can come and check out the inside where the Historical Society will be set up, but also just a nice setting for meetings, and they rent it out for graduation parties and small events like that. So it's kind of an unknown treasure in our community. I've been in there just a few times since I started doing this, and when we started planning, well, let's do it down there because that'd be a nice way to join in with the farmers market and showcase our River Center.
And, right, and since it's a birthday bash, bring the history into it as well. So where exactly is the River Center? What should people put in their GPS finders?
Well, the address is 211 North Main,
mm-hmm.
And it's just off the main drag in Roscommon.
Right. Main Street isn't called Main Street.
It isn't, and there's a story about how that happened with the railroad coming in and years ago, and all of a sudden Main Street had to be moved over one because of the
train.
So 211 North Main is the actual address, but it's right behind what people would know as the BP gas station.
Right.
And you won't miss it because it'll be busy with the farmers market and all. So
yeah.
If you come to town, you'll find it.
If you're on the main drag and you see the BP or Ken's Tires, you want to go one block north and you'll see a gorgeous little historical building, and that's the hub for the party and everything going on this weekend.
Yeah, and the train club is in there. They've got a little space there. They're going to have their little train going for kids to ride on. They do that during the market.
Yeah, there is a big model train club in Roscommon.
Yes,
in fact, do they still have their own storefront?
Yes, they do. Yeah, and they're going to have some stuff going on. They were setting up a train display inside their train tracks that they do the kiddie rides on. So they'll be active in that too. So
So fun for the whole family. The farmer's market starts at 10. The celebration officially kicks off at 1 through about 9:30. So
yep.
Live music that entire time. A beer tent, food trucks, so you can sample different things.
Yep.
And I'm guessing it's a Saturday. A lot of the local vendors are open. A lot of the local store openers are open. Stores are open.
Yes, yes. And they're, some are staying open later, but others are just keeping their normal hours. So it's a, you know, can come and go and walk around town and
yeah.
Enjoy our little village. A lot of great things going on.
The Village of Roscommon does a great job of coming together and supporting the downtown community. I know we've done the Christmas parade, we've done the shopping nights, and fall in northern Michigan is beautiful. It's a great time to get out and check out a colorful and supportive small village coming together, having a good time.
Yeah, I've been thinking that it's a time where you can have it all. You can have that
you
great
can.
Colors and a great party and see your friends. And so
right.
It's really going to be a special day tomorrow for us.
And Dan, what is your official title with the Village of Roscommon?
I am the Director of Economic Development. So I've been doing a lot of business development, economic
uh-huh.
development, but this project has kind of taken over for the last several weeks. But
well, having folks come down and check out what y'all are up to is definitely a priority. So thanks
yeah.
for all the work you've done. Thanks for being there. And thanks for inviting everybody to your birthday party.
Hey, it's going to be a blast. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I'll be there. Everybody come on down to the Village of Roscommon tomorrow from 10 to 1 to 9:30.
Yeah,
all kinds of fun to be had. You're listening to Northern Focus on Q100. I'm Joe Mama filling in for JC. We've got a couple messages from our very cool partners, and then we'll be back with more community connections at Q100.
The Traverse City Record Eagle supports WCMU Public Radio in Traverse City with total access Record Eagle subscriptions.
Welcome back to Northern Focus. Joe Mama with you on a Friday, filling in for JC in the afternoon, and darn glad to be here today because I had a chance to meet Ms. Mary Beebe. She is the prosecutor for Roscommon County, and she is a candidate for the 82nd District Court Judge. Welcome, Mary.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
You're from Roscommon County. Tell me where the 82nd District lies.
The 82nd District covers Roscommon County and Ogemaw County.
And you are a candidate for the nonpartisan position of judge.
That is correct.
Your title is prosecutor, so I'm guessing you're bringing a lot of professional background into this candidacy.
That is correct. I've actually been with the court system in Roscommon for 27 years. I started out actually as a probation officer in 2015. I started working for the 82nd District Court. It was then the 83rd District Court, so it's actually the same district court that I am running for judge now.
But somebody got out their crayon and redrew those, didn't they?
Yes, they did. So I worked as probation officer for 17 years. 2008, I decided to go to law school. I'm not quite sure what made me do that. But I worked full-time and went to law school on the weekends for 3.5 years, got my law degree in 2012, and I actually packed my bag up and walked across the hall to the prosecutor's office in 2012.
Wonderful. So you have a lot of professional background, and not only that, a lot of local background.
That's correct.
How do you think it will help you, having worked in these situations and here locally, to transition into the role of district court judge?
In 2016, I was appointed head prosecutor, and then I was elected in 18, and then elected again in 2020. So I've been in the prosecutor's office now for 10 years. And as a probation officer before then, as a probation officer, you're making decisions for the defendant, you know, what probation they should have, what type of programs they should have. You're thinking about the victim and how these programs are going to help them. You're thinking about the community as far as safety. Well, then when you go over to the prosecutor's office, you're doing the same thing, right? You're looking at the defendant as far as when you're charging them, what type of sentences should be appropriate or charge agreement, what is best for the victim and how that's going to affect them and impact them, and again, community safety.
Right.
So it all comes together. So when I look at being a judge, you're doing the same exact thing. You should be considering as a judge the defendant and his rights or her rights, the victim and their rights, because they also have rights,
mm-hmm.
and the individuals in society and the public to be safe in their communities and their property. So it all comes together. And when you've had a job like mine for the past 27 years in the county, looked at that the entire time, it makes the transition very easy for me. And I'm looking forward to that and hoping the voters vote me in for that.
Well, it's a very complex matrix and something you have to consider each and every time. It's not always easy to know the answers, and you have to give so much energy to each case. But you were telling me earlier that you have additional background, just life experience, that might help you function as a fair sitting judge in the 82nd District Court.
I tell people that I've actually been in the court system all my life. I was in foster care as a child. My family had a lot of substance abuse and mental health issues in it. As often happens with foster care, we are put back into as children into the home, even though it might not still be a really safe environment. I mean, that was our case. It was my mother ended up going with another individual who had a lot of substance abuse issues. My mother's the one that had the mental health issues. So again, not a very healthy environment. As a young teen, I needed to get out of that environment. I knew that, so I started staying with some friends. And then through that, I finally convinced the court to let me have a guardianship. And then through that family, I actually met my family who adopted me later on as an adult and took me in as a teen. And so when you have that background, that personal background of what it's like, because most of the people that come into the court system, they have those type of backgrounds in many ways. Substance abuse, mental health situations, destructive home life, socioeconomic issues. And when you're familiar with that from a personal level, and then you add all of my knowledge that I've gained over the last 27 years as a probation officer and prosecutor, it makes a world of difference because you can relate to that. And
you can recognize maybe what you're seeing and what circumstances and the kind of pressure those circumstances might bring to bear on a defendant, the challenges of the victim, and you're a lawyer, you know the law, that's we count on you as society to uphold that. So it sounds like you're bringing a lot of experience to be able to wade through that matrix every time you consider a case.
Yes, and I think that that is really what makes me different than most candidates and that are out there, is because when you have that background and understanding of really everybody that those type of situations affect, it makes you look at things differently. The law is the law and you apply the law, but there's a lot of places in the law that gives you the ability to be fair, gives you an opportunity to have some discretion in how you do things.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in accountability. I tell my kids every choice we make has a consequence.
Right.
But I also believe in rehabilitation, because to truly avoid recidivism, mm-hmm. you have to have rehabilitation too. But you can't just, you know, say no accountability. You have to have some of that as well.
Right. And for our listeners who are unfamiliar, recidivism is committing another offense or a similar offense.
Repeating that same offense or similar offenses over and over again.
So Mary, at this point in your career, what brought you to the decision to become a candidate as a district judge?
Well, I'm going to tell you that I love doing what I do as a prosecutor. And it was a difficult decision for me actually to decide whether I was going to run for judge. But I had told myself, if our judge retired, which he did in December, if I felt that there was somebody capable of doing it, that I would not run. But if I felt that we needed somebody in that position was going to continue on doing things the right way, that I was going to put in.
That is very public service minded of you, because this is, I wouldn't say it's thankless, but this is something that, again, requires a lot of energy, a lot of personal, emotional investment, as well as giving up sleep and giving up a lot of personal considerations in order to serve. So it's good to hear why you chose to do that, that it's not strictly a career move for you, or that you feel like you're trying to fulfill a big role that's demanding for whoever becomes the judge. Just out of curiosity, I am a person who achieved a college degree at a traditional age. I was 21 when I graduated with my bachelor's, and I waited a long time to go back and get a master's. And it was funny because I had a lot of life experience to apply to that degree. Were you a little bit older when you went back to law school?
Oh, yeah. So that was in 2008. I was well into my career, my late 30s, when I went back to school. And like I said, at that time, I was actually, you know, married. I've been married for 33 years to my husband, Dennis. We have two biological children. We were taken in a exchange student that year when I decided to go back to law school. So we were raising a family, and I knew it was going to be difficult for them because I was gone every weekend. But again, I decided that I wanted to be prosecutor because I wanted to fulfill a role that I felt was important to our community and that we needed somebody in there that was going to care about our community, and I wanted to continue that, what we had going on in our prosecutor's office, and was hoping that that would be the opportunity that I would have, and I actually was blessed.
Don't you think it's true that, I'm going to be a little bit sexist here, cats and kittens, as a woman, the more we have to do, the more we get done, the more we rise to the occasion.
It is so true, because I am asked over and over and again, how did you do it?
I had to.
Day by day, you had to do it. You got through it. I've had a lot of, you know, firsts. I've been excited because I have first female prosecutor in Roscommon County. You know, if I am elected, first female judge in Roscommon County, that means a lot, too.
So tell us, Mary Beebe, candidate for the 82nd District Court judgeship. When are the elections, and what should we look for on the ballot if we're part of the 82nd District in Roscommon and Ogemaw counties?
The election is November 8th. Obviously, the absentee ballots have gone out, and we are a nonpartisan position, so it won't be your Republican or Democrat. It'll be nonpartisan, and it'll be listed as the 82nd District Court Judge.
Mary Beebe, it's been my pleasure to host you on Northern Focus here at Q100. We'll look forward to the results and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Welcome back to Northern Focus, brought to us by Kirtland Community College. And a special treat, JC in the afternoon, freshly returned from an incredible trip with the American Veterans.
Nothing will match what happened on. I applied to be a guardian after we've had the guys on from Mid-Michigan Honor Flight a few times. I was honored to be part of the flight that left on Wednesday. We're going to have a ton of video posted on Q100-FM.com if you want to see this. I highly recommend that you do. We got up at 4:30 in the morning, and there was 170 of us, half veterans and half guardians. And we got on three buses, and a couple of state troopers and 14 freedom riders, and they escorted us to the airport. And when we got to Traverse City Airport, when we walked in, the entire pathway to our flight gate was lined on both sides by flags and other veterans and VFW guys, and they were applauding and cheering everybody. And we flew to Reagan National, and there was 85 people. We went to the World War II Memorial, which I had never seen, which was intense. We had four World War II veterans with us.
That is a lot in this day and age.
Yeah, well, there's actually 7,000 in the state of Michigan. There's about 42,000 veterans. We lose about 100 a month.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that at least four of them got to take this trip with you all.
Absolutely. So we went to the World War II Memorial and then the Lincoln Memorial and the Vietnam and Korean War veterans. And, you know, and it was a very emotional. I don't want to get into all the stories, but it was pretty intense. And then we went to Arlington National Cemetery and the four World War II veterans laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And then we went to this very cool new Woman in War Memorial, and we had five gals that were inducted into it that were on our flight.
Awesome.
Yeah, Iraqi vets. And then when we flew home, there was more like 500 people at Traverse City Airport, and a piper led us and all these flags, and there was all these kids had written letters to all the veterans and gave them all.
We can't get too far away from our history if we want any success in the future. Well, it's good to hear the kids were involved.
Yeah, no, and I saw this one kid that gave the first World War II veteran, and she asked him if she could have a hug.
That's awesome.
So I was lucky to have on this flight Earl Morris, who created this wonderful charity in 2005, and he explains the whole impetus of it. So check this out. Visit Mid-Michigan Honor Flight. It's an amazing charity.
And we will post this on Q100-FM.com. You can hear our chat on the Northern Focus podcast, and then we will post Mr. Earl's interview on its own.
Yeah, it's great. So
check it out.
Thanks for filling in for me.